Welcome back to Buzzardry. It is Monday, April 8th, 5:30 p.m. Central Time. I'm Patrick McGee here with Jonathan Brent. And off the top, Jacob Fitzgerald is out. He had prior commitments, but glad to have Brent here. So, Brent, how you doing?
I'm good, Pat. I'm out here in Dallas, and we had that totality part of the eclipse today, which I learned that concept this morning, but that freaking blew my mind. It was pitch black for a few minutes, so I'm still kind of shocked from what happened this afternoon, but happy to be here.
Yeah, and we were a little bit out of the path at Hattiesburg, and it was a cloudy day anyway, so I don't know if we got the full experience of it. But yeah, just and I guess another note just real quick, won't be able to talk about spring football. That's kind of where losing Ben Hurts is. You know, he was always at all the scrimmages and spring games, and just because neither of us were able to make the spring game, won't be able be talking any football, but I'll link a bunch of articles. Just I've tried to find every angle I can, or every article I can find of spring game discussion, and I will link that in the description. But yeah, got to talk about baseball, and Golden Eagles go 2-2 this week, losing to Southeastern Louisiana, and then taking 2 out of 3 against South Alabama. So not a bad week. You wouldn't say it's a great week either. Kind of another status quo week. You go 2-2. And but yeah, what was your thoughts overall on this 500 week in baseball?
Goodness gracious, this team is fickle. Yeah, you win a game you should probably lose on Friday, and you lose two games you should probably win on Sunday and Tuesday. I've never seen a lower ceiling or a higher ceiling and a lower floor on a Southern Miss team in recent memory. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing was this week it was continued pitching. Some struggles. I mean, I think you look obviously at Tuesday is a struggle in the bullpen where, you know, you didn't get great outings from Flowers and J.W. Armistead, and that kind of sank you in that game. And then, you know, Friday, I think you still look at Friday being a concern on the mound with Mazza, where he, you know, started the year, really did a good job throwing strikes, man. He had a couple walks in on conference play. But, you know, you look in a league play, he has 14 walks in 18 2/3 innings. I mean, I think that's almost a 7 walk rate over 9. That's way too high for what you want on a Friday night. I think you need to cut that number in half, honestly, get it below 3.5 to be up an above or at least an average ace. And high level Division I baseball. So I think Mazza's inability to throw strikes, too many free passes is a concern. And then I think you look at, you know, Sunday, I think you don't have a high as expectations on Sunday just because, you know, it's supposed to be your third best starter. But I think, you know, Armistead running into some trouble again. And I think the thing with him is kind of interesting. He has very similar numbers in a lot of ways to Billy Oldham, who has statistically been the best weekend starter. I mean, you look at his hit over 9 is just is almost the exact same. I mean, just a 0.1 decimal above Oldham. And they have they have the exact same walk rate. But I think the difference is Oldham's been able to work out of some trouble, has not had as many hit by pitches, or Armistead has over double the amount of hit by pitches in fewer innings. And then Oldham has avoided the long ball a little bit better, only 0.6 home run per 9 innings, while Armistead has given up a home run per 9 innings. So, so that's kind of how I view pitching, and I guess we can talk about the hitting later, but I guess what was your take on kind of the pitching over the week?
Yeah, I guess anytime I watch a Southern Miss game that Oz is coaching, I would expect us not to even be flirting with the opponent in the freebie battle with walks and hit by pitches, and it's tough to – you don't expect guys to just come in and be non-competitive and get zero outs or walk 3 guys, hit 3 guys, whatever. And, whatever blow-up inning that was, the fourth, where Flowers comes in, 2 hits, 1 walk. Armistead comes in, no outs recorded, 2 walks, and a hit by pitch. Like, that's just not going to win you – your win percentage in those games probably gets cut by – in fifths when you have outings like that are stacked against each other. And similar outing with Chase Adams on Sunday, strikes out a batter then can't find the zone while pitching 3 walks. It's just the blow up innings on the mound with non-competitive pitches to not being able to step on the opponent's throat when you have a lead and extending it, I think were the themes of the week for me. I think Tuesday, you look at it, we had 8 hits and a good bit of freebies. It seems like we should have converted on a lot more of opportunities than we did. Left 9 on base, just like Southeastern did. But yeah, it was that the inconsistent pitching that killed you. I thought that Saturday was a really complete baseball game. Again, here we go back to high ceilings and low floors. I think we only allowed 5 base runners. Yep, 3 hits and 2 walks. Am I reading that right? It's an incredible job by Billy. And Chandler Best has really emerged these last few weeks. I think he, other than the home run, that may be the only run he's given up in his last 4 or 5 outings. And the offense, 12 hits. But again, 12 hits, you'd expect a little more than 5 runs to be converted. And you throw up 5 zeros to end the game in the 5th through the 9th. But still, very clean baseball game. And Friday and Sunday weren't. And that's what you get when they're not. Anything can happen. You give more room for error. You can't field bunts. You have to take 3 steps before you pitch a ball home to the catcher to try to get a guy that's not a force out. It's just little things like that that I think this team's capable of doing and putting a stretch together. We just unfortunately haven't seen it yet because it's so variated.
Yeah, and I think, and now I guess at some point we can talk about the injuries. And, we probably can't say a whole lot about it because they're still trying to keep it under wraps. But, Ostrander said it on the Eagle Hour today, McCarty English is going to be out. And, there's not an official word on that timetable. But, certainly the rumblings don't sound too good. Landon Payne, who, pitched a pretty good inning against Southeastern, kind of looking like he was maybe back. Kind of on the track to where he could be kind of a late inning option there. In games, he's having another injury that apparently plagued him in JUCO and has kind of crept back up. You're kind of thin now in the bullpen where you have Sively and Allen as 2 guys that you feel like you can count on. Middleton, even though that he's been inconsistent, he's someone that you can at least throw out there, and he can either dominate, which he did against Southeastern, going 2 innings. I think he struck out 4 or 5, and then he kind of struggled a little bit against South, pitched 2 innings, gave up 2 runs. But you got those 3. But now you're kind of, and now Best has kind of moved into that rotation of your 3 to 4 core guys.
Yeah, Adams, I would say you could throw in the same categories,
right?
Been dominant or been shaky. You don't really know what you'll get, but he can eat some innings.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Adams, he has a 10 ERA in league games, 2.27 WHIP. Obviously, that is influenced by that outing against South yesterday. Overall on the year, much better numbers, 3.38 ERA, 0.98 WHIP. So he's got to get back to where he was in non-conference play. But you're going to need to find some guys now that you have, multiple arms you were kind of counting on that are going to be out for an extended period of time. And, Chandler Best, his emergence has been big in that regard, where it looks like he's kind of added the slider to his fastball changeup repertoire as a legit third pitch. But you're going to need more outings like Cole Boswell, huh, yesterday, kind of coming out of nowhere, throwing 2 scoreless innings, keeping you at least within striking distance. You kind of look at just these, just the stats on the stat page. The options, they're kind of the 3 to 4 guys we talked about, and then a bunch of guys that really haven't thrown much at all, at the Division I level, and guys that have, struggled a lot. So, it's getting pretty thin in the bullpen, and they're gonna have to figure something out, and you're gonna need, better outings from your starters, like we talked about with Mazza and Armistead, to where they're going to need to be more consistent, or else, pitching, which we thought was going to be a strength before the season, is going to turn into a weakness. So,
yeah, I think that just for some people that may have seen how we pitched Tuesday, or how we approached it, or maybe how we approached the midweek before, saying that Oz is trying to not win these games on purpose, or it's just a midweek, he's treating his bullpens like, no, when you only have 3 to 4 bullpen arms, you can trust that we quote unquote right now, like trotting out there, like you inherently are going to have more innings that you're going to have to eat when you're playing 36 a week. So these guys are going to have to get a chance, or they're going to be rid. The guys are going to get hurt. English already has, not saying that's because he was overworked, but it definitely increases the chances when you're throwing 2 times a week as a true freshman. So yeah, some guys that, including Best, who we kind of didn't see for a 2-week stretch there after UNO. Some guys that you haven't seen in a few weeks stretch or haven't thrown a ton of innings that, whose names you haven't heard in a while, maybe since that Tech game on Sunday where everybody threw. they're going to have their names called just by sheer amount of time you play on a baseball field, and they're going to have to answer the bell or else it may get ugly really fast. And it's an exciting thing for the strong pitching staff for these guys to get another opportunity. But, I mean, all you can ask is to throw competitive pitches and not give up freebies. That's all Oz wants. But if it doesn't happen, he's shown he can have a pretty short leash. So it'll be interesting to see what we do with the depth going forward. But Best already kind of improving and gaining more trust these last few outings has definitely been encouraging to see.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of what we were thinking, you know, before the year is that he, you know, maybe not necessarily become a starter, but, you know, become kind of a middle to long reliever. And I think, again, with English and Payne out, he's going to see a bigger role. I guess turning to the offense, only scored 17 runs over the weekend, which is, you know, pretty average, maybe even a little bit below average, considering you're playing against South Alabama team that, you know, is toward the bottom of the conference. But I mean, the thing is, you had 37 hits on the weekend, which is a pretty good number. But you just really weren't able to get the big hit enough. You only hit the one home run. You had six doubles, so a lot of singles and just kind of inability to get the big hit at times, especially yesterday, where you leave double digit men on base. And then you get in situations where you have a good inning like you had yesterday where you score two runs, but then you have the bases loaded with your cleanup hitter, Billy Butler, and then he grounds until a double play. So that's, two runs, that's a good inning. But, that could have been a lot more. So just inability to capitalize when you're in position to score runs. And, just kind of looking at the OPSs and league play. I mean, obviously, Dalton McIntyre has been incredible, and it's kind of funny because earlier in the year, I had cut something because I thought it was just a little too critical. It's like, it was kind of crazy that we signed this Dalton McIntyre guy. He looks like a slap hitter, and he only had a couple extra base hits in JUCO, and now he's hitting .431. He's looking like the Southern Miss Ichiro out there with his ability to string singles and, play center field and just a really good runner. So he's been, I think certainly the surprise of this team, and he's having a great year. 984 OPS in league play, and I think, I kind of talked about, his ceiling. I thought it was going to be like a 685 OPS guy. So he's exceeded everybody's expectations. But again, the guys that we talked about is kind of being the big three there in the lineup, Pato, Monastir, and Wilkes, still below 800 in OPS in league play. Obviously, Pratt had a good week. And, obviously having that Texas leaguer go ahead 6-5 there on Friday. But, he has three hits on Sunday, so good to get some production from him. But again, even at his best, he's not going to be a big power threat. I mean, he's only hit one home run on the year, that home run, that grand slam at Louisiana Tech. But you're still not really getting the offensive production you need from your Pedos, your Monasteros, your Wilkes. And then, look at Butler as well, 674 OPS. He's cooled down a little bit. So you're stringing some hits together, but it's a lot of singles, not a whole lot of doubles and home runs, and you're not getting the big hit when you need to. So thoughts on what the offense did this last week?
Yeah, I've said it in other episodes. It was just a paper cutty offense. It was one here or two here, but every time you got the one or two, you had a runner in scoring position that you left. You may have two or three guys on. It seems like a pitcher throws an 88 mile an hour meatball and we just foul it back. And then he throws a bender and we watch it for strike three. I just think that if there's anything that I think this offense lacks that maybe last year had just from the eyeball test, it's the ability to get the big hit to extend that lead and not take four innings off after it's extended. Pato was 1-for going into Sunday for the week. Monastir was 0-for going into Sunday for the week. And then they each got a few hits Sunday. But you just can't have that from 2 through 5 in a lineup. And, I think that every single – I'm checking it as you were talking. I have one more game to check before I confirm this stat. But, yeah, it's correct. Every single home run this week was a solo shot. And that's about – that kind of tells you all you need to know, and it's kind of a personification of this offense. I just wish we could stack a little more when we have success, and that kind of may dilute the zero streaks we may go on and the droughts we have after we scratch.
Because of the injuries to Seth Smith, I mean, obviously maybe you can go back to Nolan Tucker, At some point, we'll see if he can get in the lineup. I mean, I would kind of like to see a platoon there between him and Broadus, with Tucker getting the starts against the righties, which obviously, because there's a lot more righties than lefties, you'd see Tucker get most of those starts just because he at least has a good bit of experience at the Division I level playing those three or four seasons of Valpo. But yeah, not getting enough power as of late, and ability to get the big hit. And yeah, we kind of ran that under the ground a little bit. And I guess, you know, it was not a bad week. I mean, I guess we're being maybe a little too negative. I mean, you go, you know, you do win 2 out of 3, which I think was kind of seeing the status quo. I think that was, you know, 3-0 would have been great. 1-2 would have been bad. I think 2-1 is just kind of average. So, I mean, it was not a bad week from the team, especially when, you know, when you're playing 4 games away from Hattiesburg. But again, if you want to be, you know, be seen as a safe at-large contender on Selection Monday on Memorial Day, you know, you're going to have to string together some 3-1 weeks. And then eventually, you know, when you're playing, you know, your ULMs and Arkansas States, some 4-0 weeks. So 2-2, not terrible. But again, you're going to need to play a little bit better baseball if you want to be, you know, solidly an at-large team there in late May. So
yes, and we can thank those two wins. We can thank Cross-Sibley and Billy for those two wins, because that was huge. Cross eating up those 5 innings Friday night. Adams too in the back end. I mean, pitching all around on those 2 Saturdays was good. And that's what you're going to need to win games when the offense will put up 5 or 6 in a 4-game stretch each.
Yeah, and we'll see how those bullpen roles kind of continue to evolve. I mean, I think Allen has kind of, I mean, you know, I was kind of, you know, unsure about Allen as a closer just because, you know, he's been really good in middle long relief. But, you know, maybe he doesn't have quite the swing and miss stuff that like a Justin Storm or that a Ryan Ock had, or, you know, a Middleton when he's, you know, 100% go, or when he's at his, I guess, peak form. But, I mean, he's been the most consistent bullpen arm, so I think at this point he's kind of got to be the stopper. Yeah, I mean, just kind of going back to pitching, but you need longer outings for Mazza. You need fewer free passes, like he was doing in non-conference play. And then Armistead, I think he'll be okay in that Sunday role for what you expect on Sunday. He's got to be able to work out of trouble a little bit better than compared to what, you know, someone like Oldham has. Again, talking about how they have, you know, similar hit over 9 inning rates, walk over 9 inning rates, but Armistead has given up a few more big hits, a few more hit by pitches, and that's, you know, the reason why his, you know, they have the almost exact same whip, but, you know, that's the reason why Armistead has about or just under double the ERA that Oldham has. And, yeah, despite, you know, similar number of base runners getting on. So,
yeah, I agree. I think he is your Sunday starter. I don't know. I think Cross has proven to thrive out of that bullpen role. And I think there's a question later we'll get more into, but I agree. Need to keep it in the ballpark and keep it in the strike zone a little better.
Okay, so moving on to this upcoming week, Southeastern, and we're just kind of skip over them just because we talked about them last week. And both teams have not announced the starter. I'm just looking at the game notes for USM. It is a TBA versus TBA. So can't really say anything about their starter or USM starter. It'll be interesting to see how we kind of approach that with, you know, Boswell was presumably going to start maybe, but he just threw against South Alabama 2 innings. So, which, I mean, wouldn't preclude him from being an opener. But I would guess with him throwing a little bit on Sunday, maybe he won't get the start, but he could come back and throw an inning against Southeastern. And just kind of looking at Southeastern, they were swept over the weekend by Nicholls State at home. Nicholls, who, you know, could win. I mean, I guess Lamar right now is kind of the team in the Southland. They swept Oklahoma on the road, but Nicholls is 23-11. But, yeah, they were swept at home over the weekend by them. But kind of moving into the Georgia State. And, you know, Georgia State got off to a pretty good – or a really good start in league play. I mean, I think they were 5-1 in the league, swept South Alabama to start. But now they are –
and I just 7. They started 7-1 in the league. Oh, 7-2, sorry.
7-2 in the league. Yes, so they're 15-16 now, 7-5 in the Sun Belt. They are 1-16 in Massey, but they were just swept at Georgia Southern, who's, you know, playing pretty good baseball right now. Yeah, but looking at their rotation in some form or fashion, it is going to be Rob, or based on what they threw out this last weekend, Rob Evans, Bailey Coleman, and Quinn McMahon.
I've never seen that spelling in my life.
McMahon. Yeah, we'll and yeah, so just kind of looking at those three guys. So Evans is a lefty. He's going to be 93-94. Has a pretty good changeup according to D1. 5.7 ERA, 151 WHIP. Coleman is a righty, 24 innings thrown, 481 ERA, 140 WHIP. And then I guess I should have said about Evans, 21 walks, 38 Ks and 36 innings. Coleman, 8 walks, 18 Ks and 24 innings. And then McMahon, 5.94 ERA, 186 WHIP. And those last two guys are righty. So two righties in the rotation. They do have a lefty in there. So McMahon, 92-93. Going to throw a 12-6 curve. These big guys, 6-7. Yeah, so their closer, Brady Jones, who was supposed to kind of be the ace, but he's made all of his appearances out of the bullpen. He's been their closer. So he's thrown 23 innings, 1.54 ERA. 111 WHIP. He's going to be 94-95. So he's kind of he's got a big fastball. But yeah, I mean, the team ERA of 5.94, 172 WHIP. So they haven't really pitched it that well. And then offensively, they've been pretty solid offensively. 8.33 OPS, which is above average. Will Mize, 8.98 OPS. He's an older guy. 8 home runs. Ryan Dial, 8.31 OPS. 7 home runs. Luke Boynton, 1086 OPS, doesn't have as many plate appearances as other guys, but he's a younger player, 7 home runs. Yeah, I mean, they did 45 home runs on the year, so they do have a little bit of power, I would say, compared to USM. USM has 30 home runs. They're kind of your middle-of-the-pack, generic Sunbelt team. Again, one lefty in the rotation, two righties, but, pretty below average pitching numbers, decent offensive numbers. But I think, this is a series that, you're eventually going to start getting some sweeps. And I think, a road series at a middle of the pack Sunbelt team, maybe, you probably take a 2 for 3, kind of like you did against South. So this isn't necessarily a must sweep like ULM, Arkansas State will be later in the year. But I think, again, this is a team you should definitely take 2 out of 3 from. And if you play well, have a chance to sweep. So what do you think of Georgia State?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they did. It looks like a team that's done a really good job of turning the page after the non-conference. Pretty weak schedule and rough results with that weak schedule. And then just kind of lit the world on fire. Sweeping South, 2 out of 3 ULM, 2 out of 3 from a James Madison team that has a top 25 RPI right now. And then rough weekend last weekend. But, it looks like they can definitely leave the yard. They've got 15 more home runs than we do, higher OPS than us. But a 6 ERA, and I think I did the math right, a 1.7 WHIP is really high pitching-wise, so we're going to need to hopefully take advantage of that and really attack and get those explosive innings that we kind of lacked last week. But I agree. I think this is a must-win series, not a must-sweep, but I think it definitely is sweepable. And if we want to kind of pad that at-large resume, we are going to need to sweep a series that isn't just a must-sweep and kind of exceed expectations a little bit. But yeah, they've shown they can compete with good Sunbelt teams and win games when they're playing well or when other teams aren't. And just like any other Sunbelt series on the road, it's going to be tough to get out of there with 2 or 3 wins, but I think this team's capable of it.
Yeah, and it will be, from an RPI perspective, with the top 100 RPI, if you do win 2 or especially 3, that'll help the RPI.
We saw that this weekend. I believe our RPI crept up to 40 or 41, and a win Sunday may have put you into the 30s, which makes you feel really safe come late May. But obviously got a lot of ball left, but every win's important, and the fluctuation of time, and we're getting to that point in the season where I'm going to warrennolan.com after every game to see what the prognosis is.
Yeah, those RPI, the RPI impact page, yeah. One more, I guess, Bailey Coleman, who's supposed to be starting for him. He's a grad transfer from LaGrange College. He's thrown almost 280 innings in his career, so he's a grad transfer experience, right? So that's just kind of another thing to throw out about them. But, not a whole lot to say, other than what we've said. So, and then, or is that, is, you know, you have anything else to say on them, or?
Yeah, just, I mean, gotta keep them in the ballpark. They've got three different guys with at least 7 home runs and a couple guys with some high doubles numbers. And it looks like their pen may have a little better numbers than their starters. Their inning eaters kind of have higher ERAs, but we got to stay consistent and focused.
Yeah, and their most recent game they had, just 2 left-handed bats in the lineup. So I think that's a good matchup for USM. Obviously, the USM having 3 right-handed starters, you want to have as many right-handers in the opposing lineup as possible just because of the matchup stuff. Yeah, so the Sun Belt week that was, Troy swept Arkansas State. Marshall took 2 out of 3 from Texas State, a little bit of a surprise there. I think Bryce Blevins, he threw a complete game, the lefty that shut down USM, he threw a complete game. So he's having some success against other teams as well. Makes you feel a little bit better about what he did against USM. JMU swept App. We mentioned that earlier. Georgia Southern swept Georgia State. We talked about that just in talking about Georgia State. ULL swept ULM. So that's up to 15 in a row for ULL. So they're 11-1. Now they're 19 in the D1 poll. So, I mean, again, they're not beating great team. Or, I mean, you know, ULM obviously isn't good, but, you know, they did sweep Texas State, who isn't having a great year. But that's, you know, not easy to sweep a road series against a middle-of-the-pack team. They swept ODU. I think it is a weaker stretch of the schedule, but I think, you know, even the elite teams would probably find a way to go, you know, 14-1 or 13-2 against that 15-game stretch. So, impressive for them to win 15 in a row. And you know, their next they play Prairie View on Tuesday, so they'll win that to get to 16. Play La Tech, which, you know, pretty tough midweek there. But, you know, if they can win that at home, that gets them to 17. Then they play Marshall over the weekend. So they could easily run this up to 20 in a row, kind of like the Athletics did. And I guess it was 01 or 02, the scene of Moneyball, where they win 20 in a row or whatever it was. So they're playing good baseball right now for sure. And then Coastal winning 2 out of 3 against ODU, run ruling that on Sunday. And then looking ahead to the upcoming week, App State hosts Troy, JMU goes to ODU, Coastal goes to Georgia Southern, Marshall goes to ULL, Texas State goes to ULM, Arkansas State goes to South. So then you kind of look at Coastal going to Georgia Southern is kind of the series to watch there. Georgia Southern playing pretty good and maybe even putting themselves in that large contention with the top 50 RPI. But I guess what were your thoughts on the last week in Sun Belt play and upcoming week?
Yeah, UL kind of stole our powers from the last few years of that back third or middle third of the season, the double-digit win streak. But good for them. Good for them to get that recognition and get into the top 25. Good to have 2 teams in that poll right now with them and Coastal. And, yeah, I think we jinxed the Sun Belt a little bit last week saying we were top 4 in RPI and got bumped right back down to 5 this week. But still, 10 top 100 teams, 6 top 60 teams is pretty good. James Madison especially, I didn't realize till today that they had stayed up at top. I know they kind of started out well with that Arkansas win RPI-wise, but they're still number 25. I don't know how much of staying power that is, but kind of unlucky that we missed them in the schedule this year. But, yeah, UL's got a 3-game lead on everybody or more. But then the net, if you take 2 through, it looks like 11, and the standings are all within 3 games of each other. So a lot of action packed, close teams in the middle, and every game counts. And, yeah, that Coastal Georgia Southern series is against a team tied for 2nd and team tied for 4th. So the technical 3 and 4 seeds in the conference this weekend. So that's a big one.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you look right now, you have 3 at-large teams. If the season ended today, I think D1 had it as 3. But, I mean, JMU with that RPI, now that they've gotten back to 500 in the league, I think you at least have to have them on the board. You know, winning that game in Arkansas. I mean, I know that's, you know, they lost 3 out of 4 there, but, you know, a lot of teams have gotten swept at Arkansas and will continue to get swept at Arkansas. And, you know, against Arkansas, even if they're hosting them, because Arkansas, you know, probably has the best team in the country. And if, you know, if not them, they're number 2, maybe behind Clemson, but I think they're probably number 1 right now. You know, we'll continue to learn more about the league play as we, you know, after this week, it'll be 15 games in the league, which will be the halfway point of the year. So
it's crazy how fast it's going by.
Yep.
All right. We've got lots of questions today. We'll start with Kyle from Midtown, as we always do. It's a 4-parter from Kyle today. He says, 2-2 week isn't exactly what we needed. What do you think our ceiling and floor are now for the rest of the season? Oh boy. That's how I opened the episode, I think, today. I think this team's got the ceiling of a mid two seed and a floor of being at home in June.
Yeah, well, I would agree with that, I think. Yeah, the ceiling is, you know, you look up your top 30 in RPI on Selection Monday, safely in as a two seed somewhere. I think the floor is, yeah, I mean, you go like 17-13 in some of the play, you're going to have to win the conference tournament to get in. So that's kind of how I see it.
Yep, I agree. Second question is DMAC the best pure hitter / on-base guy in the last decade?
Maybe so. I mean, I think if you just talk about like pure hit tool, I think he would have to be up there. I mean, no USM hitter has had over 400 in the season, or I guess in the last 10 years, Luke Reynolds was there for most of 2018. I think he finished like 387. I mean, obviously I think when you look at just all around hitter, I mean, Wallner, just based on his power, I mean, if you just look at like the OPS numbers, you'd have to have him up there with Reynolds and, you know, maybe someone like a Trimble, Braley, I mean, you know, those guys. But I mean, if you're talking just like bat to ball skills, I mean, he might be the best of the last 15. I mean, Jared Hawkpower as well. I mean, I was looking at his, I mean, that was 20 years ago. I was looking at some of his numbers. He hit over 400. I'm going to have to pull this up because it was crazy, the bat to ball skills that he had in 2004. That was the year he got drafted as a junior. Yeah, so Jared Hawkpower, his junior year, 2004, hit 405. With 11 home runs, and let's see, he had plate appearances. That don't track plate appearances on here, do they? Oh, yeah, 306 plate appearances. You want to guess how many times he struck out in 306 plate appearances?
20.
8.
Oh, my gosh.
8 strikeouts in 306 plate appearances, hit over 400 with double-digit home runs. That might be one of the better pure hitting seasons in USM history. But yeah, in the last 10 years, I think bat to ball skills, McIntyre seems that he would be the best. We'll see how the rest of the year goes, though.
Yeah, as far as kind of table setting leadoff guys in the last decade, you know, Gabe obviously comes to mind. Mason Irby had a really great junior year here. Trying to think of other Trey Sutton way back when. But yeah, he's in that conversation for sure, and we hope we can keep it up. He's had a heck of a year and playing lights out center field as well. He's saved a few extra base hits that could easily have turned wins into losses. Last Saturday in particularly, or last Sunday in particularly. He has a question about the spring game, but we weren't there. We addressed that. And then last one is an interesting one. He says, favorite USM-related memory you can have can be anything, sports, academics, involvement, awards, etc.
Well, they asked me that, and so I was in the Talon recently for the Gold Council, and they asked me what my favorite USM memory was, and I put the 2022 regional. But and, you know, you have that up there. I mean, obviously going to Omaha, beating Houston, beating Memphis in 2012. I mean, that honestly, in terms of pure happiness, beating Memphis in that 2012 basketball game, that was up there. I cried after that one in eighth grade. So
no, I don't. I think I might have as well. Yeah, I'll do the same thing. I'll go campus wise, and then the big three: campus football. I think that Kentucky win on the road my sophomore year, junior year, sophomore year
would have been your sophomore year because I was a freshman. You're a year old.
Yeah, kind of last minute made that trip, and the whole drive up there, me and my friends I drove with were just kind of saying, please don't lay an egg, please don't lay an egg, please don't lay an egg. And we went up there in the first half, and that's exactly what we did. We laid a big old fat egg and then came back, first SEC win, and this maybe second one in this century since 2000. Put all those hours in, seeing that comeback, national TV. I mean, that environment was awesome. Baseball, definitely the 24 hours against LSU in the Heisberg Regional. I mean, that just defied all Southern Miss odds and everything to beat the Yankees twice. Flew back in for that one and canceled my flight back to Dallas to stay for the Super with 5 minutes to spare with Southwest. So that was kind of cool. And then basketball, same thing. That Memphis win that put us into the dance was awesome. Storming the court. I think the baseball team led that storm, actually. Really cool to see. I remember being logging into my computer in computer class that next day at school, and we were the front page cover story of ESPN.com that morning with our storm. So that was pretty neat. And then campus-wise, I had the honor of being elected Mr. Southern Miss my senior year, so that's pretty special to me individually for sure and all. my friends and family that helped make that happen, and being a double legacy, that kind of may have meant more to my parents than it did to me, but it was still such an honor. So great question, Kyle. I'd like to hear yours if you want to submit those with the questions next week. All right, we'll head to Twitter. You had a lot on Twitter today, so thank you all for the engagement. All right. Oh, we've got an appearance from Andrew from Tupelo. He says, kind of we do. I would assume it's a sarcastic question. He says, should we be worried about Ladner getting a call from Kentucky?
Yeah, we'll see. You know, we're just lucky that we have an Alabama and Alabama football and Kentucky basketball search in a couple months. That is just pure entertainment. So we'll see how that ramps up and see who Kentucky thinks they can get or will try to get. And that'll have a huge domino effect. I don't know if it'll come down to Ladner, that domino effect. But, you know, it's kind of like Alabama football where, you know, Saban retires and then that leads to all the way to San Jose State having to replace their coach. And you're going to see something similar and with Kentucky basketball based on that domino effect. So it's going to be very interesting for sure.
Yeah, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal after the Saban search, I think, that was tracking all the families that got replaced from the Saban firing, and it was in the 50s already, and I bet it's gone more since then. It's just wild.
So people won't yell at you on, did you say Saban firing or Saban stepping down?
Oh, sorry, it's Saban stepping down. The Saban search is what I was referring to. Sorry, I was talking too fast, but
that's fine.
Yeah. Jay's definitely not a one-and-done guy like Cal is, and I think that's what their fans are mad at Cal about. So it's an improvement there for them. He can develop a roster and not just shed out millionaires of first-rounders, 19-year-old first-rounders every year.
Yeah, they want him to get a bunch more of these grads. They want him to get a Jack Golkey for Kentucky.
How poetic would that be if he ended up at Kentucky with a new coach?
Yeah, I think he's out of it.
I guess he's done. Yeah, he's old.
Yeah, he's done, but he's a clone of him.
That'd be awesome. One of these days, a Cinderella guy is going to transfer to the team you beat.
Yeah.
And that's going to suck. All right, next question is from Blake. He says, fair to say that we still have everything we want in front of us, despite what most of us would call has been an up-and-down season. Do you think if we keep winning our weekends and a couple more midweeks, we're good for a 2 seed?
Yeah, it's kind of what we said earlier. Just, you know, you need to string together some 3-1s and some 4-0s and not some 2-2s. I mean, if you go 2-2 the rest of the way, you're not going to make the field. So, you know, you can afford a couple more 2-2s maybe, but, you know, you need, again, just more 3-1s and 4-0. And, you know, I think at least two 4-0s with, I don't know, the Arkansas State, or that might even not be a midweek week. Because I think that's the week of finals. But, yeah, I mean, going 3-0 that week and then, you know, ULM make that a 4-0 week next week. So, just need to do a little better than 2-2, I think.
Yeah, 2-2s, or I guess 3-1/2-2 weeks, going 2-1 in all your series and 500 in mere weeks. I think that screams 3 seed. If not, I mean, that screams bona fide bubble. Got to sweep ULM, got to sweep Arky State. And then I guess win 3 or 4 out of 6 against UL and Coastal, and then go 3-1 in your midweeks, I think is more of your formula, more as opposed to the 500 there. But I'm in agreement. Cloverleaf, on the topic of midweeks, Cloverleaf Mall says, thoughts on skipping midweek non-conference games in favor of playing 4 conference series in the future?
No, you're going to answer that?
Yeah, I'll go. I think that we saw a little taste of this during COVID, and I just think that may be an unsustainable model as far as non-conference scheduling balance and pitcher injuries, which are a huge topic in the major leagues right now. I think right before this pod, I saw another huge Astros pitcher, Framber Valdez, maybe going on the IL after all the other big names that did this week. But no, I think that the 3 on the weekend and 1 or 2 in the midweeks against non-conference is best for college baseball, even though I guess that may save on travel costs is the idea there. I don't know how sarcastic this question is.
Yeah, but. Yeah. I mean, he may be just talking about like midweeks and getting rid of midweeks because of the team struggle in midweeks. But actually, it was funny he asked that. I was thinking earlier today, just trying to like non-conference scheduling stuff. You know, I think USM, they try to get to around 30 home games a year. But so that means, you know, you're going to play one non-conference weekend away from Hattiesburg. I was just kind of trying to think just from RPI or I guess just in terms of competition or from the competitive aspect of it. Playing 2 weekends away, you know, maybe better than playing one. And I was thinking, you know, the way you could get to, you know, 30 home games while still playing multiple weekends away from Hattiesburg in the non-conference would be, you know, playing like 2 4-game weekends at home against somebody. I don't think they'll ever want to do that. But, yeah, I know that didn't really answer his question. But I don't think that'll – I think maybe there's a couple – or I guess they did it during the COVID year, but I don't think anybody does that. I was kind of looking around. Maybe like the Horizon League might do it. But yeah, I don't think that'll ever happen. But I wouldn't mind that in non-conference like I was talking about. Just
That's a good idea.
To a little more flexibility in the non-conference league.
Yeah, I don't think baseball produces enough money for Sankey to play dictator here and just kind of throw his thoughts, irrational thoughts out in the interviews. Next question is from Brick. He says, maybe it's good that we don't hit a streak now. Maybe we've been peaking way too early these last few years. I know we've got to win a lot of games, but being in the Sun Belt should give us some leeway. Pull a 22 Ole Miss and be average all season and get hot to 4 weeks when it actually matters. I don't know. There were question marks in that tweet. I don't know where the question is. But I think he's saying, is it good that we're not peaking right now?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think really the last couple of years they have played, USM has played pretty good baseball in June. I mean, previously, you know, you feel like before like 2019, you know, you usually played some of your, maybe not your worst baseball, but pretty average baseball in June. Whereas, you know, 2019, 2021, 2022, and 2023, you can argue that the team was playing some of its base baseball, at least in the regional. And then, you know, these last 2 years in the super regional, you've either ran into a red hot team or an extremely talented team like Tennessee was last year. That was, you know, they were a 2 seed, but they're really a top 8 quality team that just ran into a little bit of trouble in SEC play, which is why they got a 2. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing about college baseball is why I kind of de-emphasize the regular season, I guess, mentally, is, and I'm not as attached to the regular season mentally, where I'm not really, you know, like in 2017, I would be, you know, heart racing over a midweek against Southeastern and Biloxi to try to keep host chances alive or in good shape. Whereas now I'm kind of like, you know, let's just get in that field of 64. And then when June rolls around, that's when, you know, you can really freak out. And again, you can go 60-0 in the regular season and then, you know, lose in the postseason, you know, you didn't accomplish a whole lot. I mean, obviously, obviously the regular season matters to a degree to get in the postseason. And I do think something like a regular season title, that's something I do put some value in just because I think it's, you know, an accomplishment to be the best team in your league over a 30-game stretch. But I do think, you know, if you ask me, would you rather be the regular season champ but go 1-2 in a regional or be the number 3 team in the conference and win a regional, I think I would easily take the third place finish in the regional title. So it is all about the postseason. And, you know, I think it's not, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing that the team hasn't peaked yet.
Yeah, I agree. I think the only caveat I'll add to that is we are going to have to play better baseball than we are right now to even make the field. We are going to have to see that step up that we've referenced, and the SBC doesn't have the staying power and the reputation and the leeway that you'll get with the committee that Ole Miss had with the SEC that year. I feel like I'm making all these Major League Baseball comps today, but these last few years as a whole have just taught me how much of an absolute crapshoot postseason baseball is in any way. I mean, the Braves win from a wild card in 21, the Rangers win from a wild card in 23, Arkansas in 21, and Tennessee in 22 being the two best teams in college baseball from start to finish. Didn't even make it to Omaha those 2 years. The Ole Miss Natty, the state, well, state was really good in the regular season, but there's just a lot of randomness involved in postseason baseball. And, yeah, if we could hit that streak, you would argue a week later and carry it into the second weekend in June this year, that'd be great. But I'd still like us to see us playing better baseball and at least more clean baseball. And I hope that starts soon. Okay, next question from Muster Buzzard Bleacher Creature. They say, given the level of institutional support our peers enjoy, aka 21 mil for Coastal and 17 mil for Troy, should USM up their institutional support of the athletic department, especially given that other schools listed above get 1/5 of the alumni donations? I would assume this is supposed to say that USM gets. I'll say that our two answers being large sports fans would be, yeah, we'd love that. But because that's what we value, that's what we're passionate about. But I think there's a lot bigger of a puzzle piece of a puzzle at large with where the rest of that money goes and where what student fees look like and how that would raise tuition with the president's office and the finance office has to sort through.
Yeah, so that's an interesting question, and that was the kind of thing that came up after JMU won their game against Wisconsin, and it sort of went viral about just the amount of student fees that JMU collects. I forgot. I mean, it's in the 2000s, I think, I think it's per year, not semester, but it is a good amount. The JMU, I mean, they generate $40 million a year off of student fees, and I think I couldn't exactly get the number off student fees for what USM collects a year in that regard, but I mean, maybe you could raise it. I wouldn't necessarily be against raising that a little bit just to generate a little more money for athletics, but definitely not to the level that JMU does. And I think you look at JMU, I mean, you know, they have there's a New York Times study that was done, or a Harvard study that was published in New York Times in 2017. And just for comparison, JMU's like median student income based on their median family income of the students was like 150K. And USM was like 60K. So that just shows that a JMU type, they can, take that burden a lot easier than a USM can with our student body. I think as far as the institutional support, the USM institutional support, it primarily comes from auxiliary funds, which are what a university generates itself. So athletics is an auxiliary fund. But outside of athletics, I think that the second biggest auxiliary fund would be housing. So, you know, dorm, you know, you're charging for room and or room and board and, you know, housing. And I think another big auxiliary fund would be parking. So like parking passes, parking fee or parking tickets. And that's a big reason why growing enrollment is important, because the more students you have, the more housing you can have, and that generates more auxiliary funds that can go to athletics. Same thing for parking. But yeah, I think that they can pull maybe a little bit from the general fund to a degree. I don't know what the limit on that is, but I think it's mostly from auxiliary funds, which again is coming from what the university generates itself from athletics, but also housing, parking, and other things. I mean, like the campus printing center or whatever, or like just like services that the university does itself. There's not a print. Well, I don't know. I said that.
There's a print center.
Okay. Yeah. So I mean, whatever money you can get, yeah, just funds that the university generates itself. And I think that there is a misconception because people will look at like the budget and say, well, USM has a $100 million. Endowment or whatever it is, but I mean, most of that is money that's granted toward a specific thing. You know, they can't take money from like, you know, the Stennis Research Center or something on the coast, like the Gulf Coast Research Lab, and move that to like Reed Green renovations. Because the budget and the endowment, those are, you know, like federal or state things that cannot be moved to things that they are not intended for. So, but that's kind of a long-winded answer and trying to explain, I guess, sort of how that process works. And I don't think I definitely didn't do a perfect job of it, but just kind of a far away snapshot of it.
No, I appreciate that. I think that the listeners may learn more from that answer than anything else that we're saying about baseball today.
No,
education goes. Next question is from Alex. It's an interesting one. It says, besides scoring or margin of victory, if you could pick one team statistic that you can guarantee USM would lead the country in every season, which would you choose? Can focus on baseball or all major sports. For example, in football, I think I'd choose turnover margin. That's Alex talking, not me.
Yeah, well, I think turnover margin, that's a pretty easy one, because whoever wins the turnover margin usually wins the football game. So that is all. I'll skip that one, but I will say, for football, adjusted net yards per attempt passing. So, I mean, we've seen how the football overall, both college and pro, has shifted to the more passing off or, you know, passing heavy offenses. And I think, you know, if you have a really good passing offense, that means you have a really good offense. And if you have a really good offense, you probably have a really good team. I mean, obviously, there are some exceptions, you know, Patrick Mahomes, Texas Tech era, where they had him and they were still going like 5-7, 6-6. But I'll say that adjusted net yards per attempt passing, that would guarantee USM has a great passing attack. That, and again, great offense. And if you have a great offense, you're going to win a lot of games, more than likely, as long as your defense is at least, you know, even mediocre, you probably win 9 or 10 games that way. So that's what I'll say.
Yeah, I guess I'll do one that hasn't been said for all three. Football, the one that came to my head was red zone efficiency. Maybe that's just sore. Maybe that's just still sour in my head for how bad we were at it last year, it seemed like, in football. Obviously, the outlier here is you don't get in the red zone a lot, but if you do, if you're efficient, that just translates to a lot of points. Baseball, I think you could narrow it down to WHIP and OPS. Your WHIP is low. If you lead the nation in WHIP, you're allowing the least amount of base runners. That's a really good thing. If your OPS is high, that means you're not only hitting and getting on base, but you're doing it with power and slugging too. They're baked into that. And then basketball, again, maybe just a sight for sore eyes after watching us play the last few years. But you saw at this tournament with Alabama, 3-point percentage would be something really refreshing to have to lead the country. And yeah, those are the three that came to my mind for the big three for that. But yeah, thanks, Alex. Great question. And we have a two-parter from Dylan next. He says, do you replace Armistead as a Sunday starter? And if so, who do you put in this spot? And then the 1B to that is, do you start Army on midweeks or have him come out of the bullpen? I think we addressed this early in the episode. I think Armistead stays Sunday. Every other guy that you could potentially replace with him, you like in the pen right now, Sibley, Adams, Middleton, and you like to see them multiple times a week. And Sibley's shown that he's way better. Sibley individually has shown he's way better in the pen. Yeah, that's my stance.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think at this point you just don't have enough pitching depth to where you can move someone like Armistead to the bullpen. So, you know, maybe if you had like a 2022 level staff where you have, five guys you can really trust there in the bullpen, maybe you do that. But based on what you have this year, I just think, yeah, he's your best option on Sunday.
Yep. Now we have a couple questions from Jace. First one is, why is Oz not giving Eli Collins a chance? Dude has potential at the plate and looks very solid in the field. Just feel like we really need to switch up at third base.
Yeah, man, I don't know enough about the player, really. I mean, I know he was a JUCO transfer. And, yeah, I mean, I guess he just things brought us as the better player between those two right now. I mean, I think, you know, they've used Collins as a pinch runner. But, again, I just don't know enough about him just because he transferred in from JUCO. Didn't see enough of them in the scrimmages to really gain an opinion on them. So yeah, I think Broadus is a little better, you know, maybe offensively. And I don't know about the defensive comparison, but I know Broadus was at least pretty good in junior college. At least pretty good average. He didn't have much power, but hit tool guy in JUCO.
Yeah, I think that this week, if you see lineup shakeup, you'd probably see it at third base. Broadus is coming off a week where he had one hit. And he's got similar, if not worse, numbers to Russo, who's already been bitched for similar numbers once this season. So, whether that's Nolan Tucker coming back and playing second, moving Monaster to third, or Collins at second or third, with Monaster playing the other, I think that is a position that you could potentially see some shakeup at this week. And his next question is, do you think we must sweep a couple series here in order to give us some validation for a 2 seed in the postseason? Yes, I think we've addressed that. Yes, you definitely need to sweep ULM and Arky State, and hopefully one or two more in there for a 3, nonetheless a 2.
Yeah, I think another series you kind of look at being sweepable now is Texas State. Texas State is now 5-7 in the league. They're in the hundreds of RPI. That's at home. I think that's a series. It's not on the level of an Arkansas State or ULM, but I think that is a series you probably could, or you know, definitely could and probably should sweep. So, I mean, if you do that, that would give you 4 sweeps. If you sweep, you've already swept Marshall. You sweep the 2 Arkansas State ULM that we talked about, then Texas State. I mean, that's 4 sweeps. You'll say you win 4 other series, 2 out of 3, and then you lose one more. You either lose to Coastal or ULL, 2 out of 3. So that would leave you with 4 sweeps, 4 2 out of 3s, 2 1 out of 3. So that would be 22-8. Man, that would definitely put you in as a 2 seed, 22-8 in the league. Or definitely, yeah, I think that would be a 22-8 would definitely be a 2 seed, I think.
Yeah, I agree. But that is, if you mix and match some of those series, like if you sweep Coastal but get swept by Arky or ULM, like that could cause some shakeup if enough of those are landmines.
Right, yeah. But I mean, yeah, hopefully you don't get swept by ULM. Or is that, right, is that what you said? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Just hypothetical that those wins need to be allocated in the right places.
Yes.
And then last one from him, he says, do you think the bats not having enough consistency or is us not having as many good arms is why we aren't dominating like the past couple of years? I think it's fair to say that's a combination of both.
Yeah. I mean, you're just, you know, even though the offense has kind of been inconsistent the past couple of years, I mean, the last 3 years, I think they said it was like the highest number of home runs over a 3-year stretch in USM history or something like that. So even though it's been an inconsistent offense, you at least had home runs. And this year, power numbers are down a little bit. So yeah, I mean, it is a combination of both, I think.
Next one's from Colin. He says, can y'all help me feel better about this catcher situation? Had some hits this weekend, but I feel defensively we are weaker at that position than I've seen in a while, no matter who's back there.
Yeah, I think the catcher thing is weird because I think Stockman is the best offensive weapon. I think he showed that over the week, you know, getting, you know, a decent number of hits. He's at 2 home runs on the year. None of the other catchers have a home run. Probably has the strongest arm if you listen to what the staff says, but, you know, maybe he's not as good of a receiver as Keys or Odom is. I think with South Alabama, I think they steal a lot of bases this season. I think that's why they had Stockman back there because of his arm. So I don't know if anybody's solidified or locked that down yet. I like Stockman back there just because I think he's the best hitter and he has the best arm. But, you know, and we've certainly learned from years past that they do value that receiver aspect of the catcher, you know, dating back to like Cole Donaldson. I remember, you know, Barry talking about how good a receiver he was, Blake Johnson. So I think Odom's ability to receive, I think they think he's the best receiver probably. And that's why he's gotten the majority of the starts, even though he didn't get any starts this last week.
Yeah, I think that another thing I'll add about the people running rampant on us is I think that more of these bases may be on the pitchers than the catcher's arms. I think that a lot of these are early jumps, not checking a guy at second, specifically on the ceiling third, and maybe not checking guys as consistently or getting too predictable with their tendencies that I think our pitchers could do a little better job of holding guys on to, but hope that doesn't get exploited consistently. Or maybe we run into lineups with not as much speed as South later down the road. Wow, we have a future friend or a former friend here, Ellis Johnson, not his ghost, the real one. He says, what is the problem with pitching on Tuesdays and Sundays? Are we not as deep as we thought we were? Yeah, I think we've talked about this last few episodes, back into your pen coming into the year, Jake Cook, Landon Payne, those guys, those two names may not have another appearance this year for all we know. Same with McCarty English injury. Matt Adams not even going to throw a pitch all year. That's your number 4 starter from last year. When you're depleted and you have
really
the turnover go ahead.
Or sorry, really the number 3. True. I mean, I guess in that super he didn't start on, but he started the game 3 of the regional. But sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah. When you lose an All-American, when you lose one of your 3 best starters, when you lose 3 guys out of your pen that you expect to be contributors, like on top of the turnover, that's going to add up to a thinner staff, no matter if I'm coaching the pitchers, if I was coaching the pitchers, or if the best pitching coach in Major League history is coaching the pitchers, that there's a lot more room for error or less room for error when you're scratched that thin, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Tuesday and Sundays, those are typically days where you're not going to be throwing your top guys. And, you know, we've talked about bullpen depth, and, you know, bullpen depth is, shaky at best. That's what we talked about, and I think that's, you know, big reason why you've seen struggles on the mound on Tuesday and Sunday. So,
yeah, I kind of said this when we were in the freebie stretch on Sunday and Tuesday this week, that I'd rather give up 20 hits and no walks in a game than just watch us give free base after free base. It's frustrating. And I'm of the belief that, and I know Oz is too, that's why he has such a short leash, and I get that, of freebies are the worst thing that a pitching staff can give up. Pitch to contact, stay in the zone. If it gets hit, it gets hit. The 470 foot bomb from Blake Burke counts the exact same as a 326 foot bomb down the line.
Yeah,
that's okay. But yeah, I think that's all for. Nope, one more. Sorry, this is from Good Old Boy, whose handle is Redneck Natty Sip. So, love our fan base. Looks like we're adding the new burners each and every week. He says, "How do you see our catcher/first base situation panning out? Keep rotating? ? Can the back of our pen be fixed by Oz?" I think we've talked about the back of the pen, but maybe first base is the area we haven't touched yet from these questions.
Yeah, I think Gillespie, he's still going to be the guy. I mean, he has one of the better OPSs in league play, over 800 in the 12 conference games. I mean, obviously, he hasn't been stellar defensively at times over there just because he's still learning the position. But again, first base is the least important. I mean, first base or left field. And I'd probably say first base is a little less important than left field, honestly. Maybe he's struggling at a non-defensive or a non-premium defensive position, but he's been one of your better hitters in league play, so I think he's gonna stick there for now.
Yeah, thinking of corner infielders that may not have had the best start to their careers here. I think about Danny, who maybe didn't hit for a ton of power and had a pretty low average beginning of his first couple years, and then really, I mean, we know what Danny Lynch has done as a player, and I see the same with Gillespie. I think there's a lot of potential there, and the coaches have said it out loud, and you can see it kind of when he gets in these hot streaks like he did a couple weeks ago. But yeah, I think that he's done enough to warrant himself staying in the lineup. And although Butler's been kind of cold, it seems like, or maybe not as powerful as he was around the tech time of year, a 300, 290 average is still enough to stay in there. But third base and left field were also places that Gillespie could potentially play or has played in the past. But I think that does keep Russo as a pretty good pinch hitter and defender on your bench, which is an asset that we may not have had in years past.
Well, that will do it, I think. Again, going to link everything I can find for spring football and put it in there just kind of as a, I guess, a clearinghouse for people to read on spring football. And we will be back next Monday. And we thank folks for listening.